Kyle is his name. And then, like, all the other characters in this game are named, like, Sarlacc and Vlaros and something, like, fantasy-sounding.
And he's Kyle. Welcome to New Game Plus, a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Nolan.
And you are listening to and or watching episode 260.
We have a YouTube. 260.
Yeah, we're still about at this 260.
What are you talking about? We're great.
We are. We are.
I'm good.
We're quasi-professional.
We are now less than a month away from the end of Adobe Flash Player.
I thought that was already deprecated and dead and everything.
I think it's defecated, first of all.
Depreciated, you morons.
It ends at the end of 2020. I have regularly been getting alerts saying that the day is coming, and it's asking me to go ahead and delete it, but I will not preemptively delete
that.
What is it,
like Y2K? Why does this matter?
You like having a terribly insecure system in the meantime? Like, there's reasons they're turning it off.
Why would we talk about Adobe Flash Player on a retro gaming podcast? Because, believe it or not, dear listener, dear Kenny and Nolan, Adobe Flash Player played a pivotal role in the gaming scene in the early 2000s. And you know that because you utilized Adobe Flash Player, and you need to show it the honor that it deserves.
I used it for RuneScape.
There was a generation that grew up wasting computer lab time by playing Flash games.
Excitebike, or not Excitebike, but like the one where you're going over the things and you have to balance the guy.
Quap.
The Stickman game?
No, but it's
like kind of like Quap, actually.
What I want to do is mention a few key titles and see if you played them or have any connection to them. There are, of course, thousands because people made so many.
I like this.
Which is so nice, and they were all free.
Like, I know. They were all bad. But they were
all of them. There were so many that were so good.
Okay.
I'm going to name a few key ones that I know of, titles that I connected to, and see if you... I didn't connect to every single one of these, but see if you have any connection to any of them. Starting with a game called that started on Flash called Bejeweled. Have you heard of it?
We've played it.
I mean...
Kenny hates it.
We did it on this podcast. It's
Kenny doesn't
overrated.
Think it's a game, apparently.
Think I said that. I don't know.
But it did start with Flash. So that's a big deal. One of our games that we played on this podcast started with Flash. Bloons.
Yes. The Tower Defense?
One of my favorite. So there is Bloons Tower Defense. I played straight up Bloons, and I think that's one of the best Flash games.
Were you supposed
ever.
To just like pop a bunch of balloons?
You're a little monkey, and you've got these little darts that you have to aim.
So good.
But there's a Tower Defense one that I think started or was at the early edges of Tower Defense. Like, and that became a huge genre in and of itself. Club Penguin. I think it missed all of us. No, did it?
Yeah.
Nolan?
Yeah.
Yeah, Nolan's
all of these.
Enough.
Dude,
he
Computer
probably
Lab.
Spent time on it.
I took
but
Computer
Club
Lab.
Penguin was after Kenny and I.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. But like... I used, a lot of
That's
computer
so
time.
That's so funny. Club Penguin has a lot of funny meme material, though. Like, I loved watching that stuff. Meat Boy started on Flash. Did you know
did
that?
It?
Before
I didn't realize that.
I didn't either.
Before it was turned into, like, a fully fledged IP, it was on Flash.
Okay. Actually,
one of my favorite, and I think it's underrated, is a game called Motherload. Did either of you know
describe
about
it?
You go deeper and deeper into the Earth's crust. There's different levels. You have to upgrade your drill and different components of your little drill machine so that you can go lower and lower. It's a really, really good time waster.
It doesn't ring a bell.
It's so good. I did have Quap on the list.
Yeah. That one was infuriating.
I don't know what that is. That it sounds like you're just making up like an alien.
Kenny doesn't even know what it is.
Oh, it's the boomer version of Getting Over It. Have you heard of Getting Over It?
No.
Okay. Well, then he's impossible, Dustin.
Watch, Kenny, you do know Quap. It is just a little, it's a runner on a track, but you have to use the keyboard to maneuver his
you
legs.
You do each
and,
of the legs and the arms at the same time. Yeah,
so hard.
Of course I know that game. I didn't know what it was called.
Robot Unicorn Attack.
Oh,
Nolan, remember?
Yeah, they turned it into a mobile game, an app, like a app. It's so good.
So good. Ridiculous. There are so many more. I have one more here. The Impossible Quiz.
I'm pretty sure we played that together.
A lot, probably, Kenny. There's Impossible Quiz, Impossible Quiz 2. It's so much fun. So many ridiculous questions. And
I think I know.
So enjoyable. There are so many great Flash games. And so you might disrespect Adobe Flash Player because what? It gives everybody our information or whatever you're saying, Kenny. But it was worth it for all the hours of fun that we got.
It was worth it.
In the computer lab.
I pay my respects.
We do. Yeah. In fact, let's a moment of silence as we fire off our 21 shotgun salute. Shotgun salute. Like in our retro game of the week, Blackthorn.
Overview.
Blackthorn, or Black Hawk, to some of you listening.
European audience.
Yes. Is a cinematic platformer.
Yay!
Already, we're mad.
We love these games.
There's been one on the podcast. So there's been two on the podcast.
Two.
Maybe so three.
Three. Can you, three. Y'all go, boys.
Okay.
I already have
Flashback.
Oddworld.
Yes.
And Prince of Persia.
Yeah.
I forgot Prince of Persia, but like, yeah.
Prince of Persia started it.
That was early. Yeah.
Don't blame Prince of Persia for everything that came after.
Oh, I'm you have to.
What? Prince of Persia, I think, was the first cinematic platform video game.
I agree, but don't blame it for its predecessors.
All right. Was Jake Gyllenhaal Prince of Persia?
Yeah, don't watch it. Wait,
he's the guy that they actually rotoscoped for the original game to get the animations.
So this is his fault.
So everyone email Jake Gyllenhaal this week.
At jgyllenhaal.com.
Might be it. Listen, cinematic platformers are bad. We'll get to it. This is a Blizzard game. This is a console game by Blizzard. And this was like, we kind of freaked out about this last week because I had never heard of a Blizzard game on a console before. They make PC games, or they're known for extremely quality PC games. And it came out in 94. We're known for. Say that again?
I just said we're known for.
Oh, wow.
StarCraft. Yeah, WoW was one, like you just said. StarCraft.
D4 is coming out sometime.
Diablo.
Okay. Right. This game, though, was on Super Nintendo and Windows, or like DOS, I guess.
Yeah.
So, and that was in 94. So, like, weird. It wasn't published by Blizzard unless they own Interplay. Maybe they don't, but it wasn't published by Blizzard, but it was developed by them. Now, this isn't like platformer, where you like Metroid or something, or Mario. Cinematic platformers are telling a story. And they look like platformers, but they're liars, because
that's true. They're liars. They're deceptive platformers.
It's a totally different genre.
Yeah, it's much slower paced, and it's interrupted often by many different things.
Climbing up ledges, primarily.
And falling back down them.
Falling really slowly. Crouching down to pick up an item, and then the screen changing to show you what you picked up, like that kind of things. Just a slow version of a platformer. It's a very weird genre, I think.
And most of these, they try to mimic real movement. You know, like the body sizes of your characters are kind of comparable to our true body sizes. Even in Abe's Odyssey, where you're an alien species, it's the same thing. You are on two legs and you move at a regular pace, but to get down a ledge, you're not just jumping like you would as Mario or someone else. You are climbing down one ledge at a
safely
time.
Yeah.
And you have to get on the right tile to be able to properly do that. And They call it a platformer because you do have to jump across platforms and climb up and down platforms, but that's really the only connection, that there are platforms in the game, which, hey, there's also platforms in Skyrim. Like, it doesn't just because you have a platform in your video game doesn't make it a platformer.
I think we need a new name for this genre. What's it going to be? Cinematic.
Ledge Climb Sim.
Cinematic Simulation. Ooh, okay. That sounds
SS. Good. R. Now, the plot of this game is straight from the Bible. Have you heard of Jacob and Esau?
This is them?
Okay, so yeah, there are... It's really weird, and I'm not going to get too into it. I'll start with your main character. If you're looking at the box, you're like, wow, that character's really bad A. Kind of looks like Doom... dark looking thing. The guy's name's Kyle. So
yeah, he looks like he's the Terminator, and then he's got the name Kyle.
Kyle is his name. And then like all the other characters in this game are named like Sarlacc and Vlaros and something like fantasy sounding.
And he's Kyle.
You're not giving his backstory. It makes total sense. So
well, we didn't have time to read there. I think the first 20 pages of the manual is the story.
It's just
Blizzard
lore.
Wrote a 20 page narrative to set up this plot.
As they do.
They would.
I'm down with it. I like story. But it's not like RPG story where you're uncovering all of this stuff. Maybe you viewed this game that way. I didn't. But the basic setup is like, There are these two brothers. Their father doesn't know who to give the kingdom to. He leaves him in a desert, kills himself. But before he does, he's like, you have a kingdom, figure it out. Bunch of drama. People aren't happy with the kingdom. And Kyle now has to go back to this. It's not on Earth, by the way. It's on this like planet. And
Tool,
Kyle has
I
to
think.
Go back and save the day.
Tool, but definitely spelled T-U-U-L, you know, because we're fantasy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so for a second though, the game begins where like Kyle is back on Earth, sitting by a roadside, just waiting to go to this new planet, and then the spirit comes and gets him and takes him. So like Kyle's been living on Earth for probably 20 years and is in jeans in a white tank top. And has a shotgun, and now he's going to this fantasy dungeon with orcs and goblin type situation.
Right.
They were trying to relate to the average American.
He's from Earth.
No.
White t-shirt, jeans, and a gun. He is coming back from 20 years spent on Earth. Of course he's going to be dressed appropriately.
It's a weird story to summarize everything, and there's a lot to it if you want to read into it, but I'm not going to spill it for you right now.
The only thing you need to know is Kyle.
His name's Kyle. Yeah.
Gameplay.
In Blackthorn, you have 4 worlds and 17 stages, at least on the Super Nintendo version and the DOS version. For the Sega 32X, they added a whole nother world and some additional content. Because
a lot of reasons.
We would want this game to be longer. you've got 4 worlds, 17 stages. The first world is like these Sarlacc mines. It's the mines where, not the humans, but the Androthi, which are your species, your humanoid species, are being enslaved and put to work by just electrocuting the ground every couple of seconds.
I never understood that.
It didn't make any sense.
No.
And so you're in the mines. You would think you're freeing your people. And I think that's kind of what's happening, but it doesn't have the unique turn that Oddworld does, where you are rescuing your people and setting them free. Here, you're just kind of throwing grenades at doors, bursting them open, and maybe accidentally shotgunning your own people in the head.
Occasionally killing some of them.
Yeah. Every time. I have a question. Why in this genre are you always rescuing people from like cages? Every game we've played, it does that. Maybe Prince of Persia didn't.
But that's just what we do in cinematic simulations.
Why? You're the hero to save your people? Who cares? I'd rather just shoot orcs all day.
I feel like here's the thing. With the limitations that the genre places on itself, there's not much you can do. And
that's
so
a good point.
You can only slowly fight, and then they've got to come up with something else or it's going to be boring. And so they put rescuing people in it.
Yay. Okay.
I mean,
that's a good explanation. That's probably why.
You don't have just slowly fighting in this game. There's a few more options than sometimes there are. There's rolling on the ground.
So exciting. There's
climbing up ledges.
Woo!
There's interacting with other people and talking to them.
I can't
There's
contain
using
it.
Keys and other interactable items. There is shooting behind you, which you don't really have any use for, and it's a little bit of a harder button combination.
Yeah, but slow down on that, because that's cool. It doesn't do anything, you know,
no.
But I've not seen it in another video game where just to up the BA ante, Kyle, which I'll just call him, you can call him Blackthorn if you want, he doesn't turn around. He just one hand takes his shotgun, places it behind his back, and blows whatever is there behind him.
A no look shot.
Which, do you understand
great.
How much muscle and like
that? Oh, it'd break
well, I mean, it's
arm
impossible.
Off.
I mean, Kyle can do it.
He's
but,
yeah, he's strong. He's not human. He's fine. But
he's androgyny.
But then all of those actions culminate in the really high intensity sort of anchor of this game's gameplay, and that is gunfights.
Yes.
Because in this game, you can dodge bullets. Not by ducking, not by jumping, not by creating a matrix-style force field or eating them like a magician. Simply
what?
By, like,
what game
Tanuki
is that?
Mario-style, like, standing back where you remove yourself from kind of the main plane of action to, like, go to the side and be in a plane that's further back on the screen.
Which in reality makes no sense because that doesn't make you disappear from the people you're fighting.
You have to
no,
hide
if somebody's aiming
something.
At you though, and then you go like this, like their bullet will come right here. I totally get it.
But don't you think after the first time, maybe the second time they'll be like, you know what? I'm just going to shoot on this plane.
Okay. Tool, the world of Tool exists in a 2D universe. We can't,
okay.
Enforce our 3D oppressive worldview onto them. That's xenophobic.
Here's the thing about the gunplay. I'm glad it was there because in other cinematic platformers, I feel like stealth is the way to play it, especially in Abe's Odyssey. That is like it highlights stealth and it kind of encourages it. But in this one, like, I don't know. Orcs all over. Yeah, I'll get in a gunfight with you and I'll use the wall to hide. Sure. Like, at least that's more exciting to me than just rescuing people and trying not to be seen.
It would be more exciting to me if there was some level of, I don't know, like strategic interaction or if it wasn't as slow paced as it was. But what it ends up being is making sure you have your gun out correctly, because we forgot as we were talking about gameplay that you have two different modes of gameplay, carrying the gun out, which allows you to do one set of things, and putting your gun holstered, which allows you to do all your mobility things. But when you have your gun out ready to fight, you got to take it out, and then it takes a little bit of while to move back to the safe animation. And then the only real way to do it is to just sort of wait for the enemy to quit shooting at you and then shoot them. And so it's a lot of standing around, kind of just gaming the mechanics, and it didn't ever feel like dynamic to me. The whole point of platformers classically, and I know we already said this isn't a platformer, but is this real-time reaction to the stuff that's going on the screen. You're jumping, you're ducking, you know, you're hitting a flying turtle and bouncing off of it to another level, and this is literally the opposite of that.
It's slower pace. Again, that's what we do with our cinematic simulations. Is it's not, you're not going to be speed running through this game, or if you are, it's going to be a very different speed run than traditional platformers.
Yes.
Because really this is more of a puzzle a cinematic puzzle game.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's actually a better category maybe.
Because a cinematic
puzzler.
Puzzle simulation.
Puzzling exploration.
Even from the gunplay, you're puzzling out when it's like a, it's not a chess. It's maybe rock, paper, scissors a little bit, in the sense of you're just waiting for them to cock their gun again. And then you come back out later on. You're fighting some Androthi, some of your own people that are rebels, and they're a lot tougher. I think they're on some kind of random how many times they fire. And then they hide in the background too, if we didn't specify that. And yes. So you're just having to wait for the proper moment, and you're going to take a lot of damage there. But then even to maneuvering through the stages, it's all puzzle based. You are having to talk to your enslaved people, to everyone, which is frustrating because so many of them just have the same thing to say over and over again. But eventually you'll find one that's like, hey, here's a grenade, or here's a bomb. And then every once in a while, someone will say, hey, here's a key. And you'll use those keys to open a door, or to put out a
cross a bridge.
Yeah, like a laser bridge.
You've got little items that help like levitate you to a higher area.
Yeah.
You've got a kind of fun mechanic where you have these bombs.
Don't say fun.
I said kind of.
Watch out.
Like the wasps? Look.
With the wasps. Where like you have an explosive, but you can like place it somewhere specific because it's somewhere harder to reach. So there's a few things that are certainly unique about the kind of puzzle aspects of it. And I will say, in some other cinematic, whatever we're calling these games, some of that puzzling and exploration has depended a lot on like massive amounts of backtracking. Go find this thing over here, go back through all of the level to get this thing, then go over here and find this door. I felt like the level design here for these puzzles was actually really good. You didn't have a ton of that, a little bit, but you have to have some of that in this kind of world. The stuff that you needed was relatively close to the places you used it. And I had to be thinking and looking at the environment. And a few places I'd be like frustrated and like check a guide because I knew I could get through it. But who's got time for that playing for just a week? And so I don't know. I thought it was well designed for the type of puzzles it is.
Well, for a puzzle to be engaging and interesting, to me, it has to be more than just opening a door to get to a new area. And that's what the majority of these puzzles are. And not only that, you said there's keys, yes, but a lot of the things, like, you just blow up doors, like a computer. There's a computer at one point that's like got a laser door blocking. You're like, cool, I probably need a password or something. Nah, you just blow it up. You just blow the computer up, door opens, you're like, okay.
I mean, you are staging a revolution, basically, like freeing your enslaved people. There's usually a lot of violence that comes with
lore wise. Yeah, I guess I buy that, but I didn't know that's what we were doing here. I mean, I guess the emphasis on realism applies to that as well. But I even struggle to call it a puzzle. I agree with you, Dustin, what you're saying, that it's not a platform, it's more of a puzzler. I just wish the puzzles were better.
We're a little bit more comprehensive. And the thing that I would tag onto that is that it doesn't change as the game progresses. By, and the final areas, you're still blowing up doors, blowing up computers. You've got, we didn't say, but your shotgun is upgraded eventually a couple times, until I think at the end it becomes like this automatic shotgun that you don't have to reload, and that the bullets explode upon impact. Just a ridiculous like boo 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 boo.
So it's just like amazing.
It becomes amazing. Okay. Just imagine shooting that behind you with one arm, just an automatic.
Casually looking behind you and blowing up anything.
But one of my frustrations with any platformer is when either your character doesn't evolve or the stage doesn't evolve, the game doesn't evolve, to have different challenges. I've said that many times. And while your gun evolves, it doesn't change the gameplay any, and the stages don't really change. They become more difficult. You fight increasingly difficult trash mobs, whatever, but you don't. The game doesn't really change.
It doesn't. And the problem with that, the added layer on top of that, is that, and you mentioned this earlier, I think, the game's very picky about positioning and where your character is in order to interact with something. So when you're seeing the same layout over and over, but you still can't stand in the right spot to jump up on a ledge or to climb a ladder or to do whatever, I'm just like...
Or to make the jumps. That's the most frustrating one, is because early on, you're not punished too terribly much because fall damage only like comes into play when it's significant. Like you can fall a little bit here in this game, which is good. But if you're going to get to ledges and you're going to try to make the jump thinking that you made it, but if you weren't standing on the right pixel, the right tile, whatever, you're not going to make the jump. And then when you have to start bringing running jumps into the mix, then it's even more difficult to get the timing right.
Right.
And later, you know, if you're not making those jumps, you're dying. And then you only have one life. So you're using your password system to come back in. It becomes very frustrating, but that is problematic with this cinematic puzzler platform simulation genre that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's the big problem.
It really is. And it's the nature of how they tried to animate it and that hyper-realism. It's hard to do that without sort of breaking that look, but I don't think it's an excuse. I think the genre should have evolved and sort of fixed that issue because it really is one of the things that kills it. All of those like complaints about the genre said, I will say like gameplay wise, this is put together pretty well. The menuing and the controls are pretty intuitive. Like the stuff you do makes sense and you have a decent number of options we already talked about. And so I really felt like they did spend a lot of time trying to make this robust. I just don't know if that's enough to get over some of the just inherent difficulties of this pace that we're stuck in.
And in all that you're talking about, I do think the genre has evolved some. One of the games that's just coming to mind that is this kind of, maybe we wouldn't.
Are you thinking Limbo? I'm
thinking Limbo. And you don't have the same proportions of the physicality there of like they're trying to do the full body. So maybe that's where it's different. But it is a cinematic platformer. And that's the evolution maybe. That it's you take away a little bit of the realism and you up the puzzles a little bit. Because Limbo, it's different all the way through. It's a short game, a short enough game that it doesn't become repetitive.
More platformer than before.
More platformer than before, more puzzles than before. And so they're able to do more than just do a little bit of fighting and rescuing somebody. You're doing different things.
Brothers,
platformer? What, Kenny, that's puzzle.
I probably wouldn't say. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to, once you jump out of 2D, to think that it still works.
Sure. So I just think that we're all kind of falling in the same place that like, I agree that for a cinematic puzzle, whatever we're doing with the genre, right?
I thought you had decided.
Well, I keep tagging on things to it, and so it's become the longest name in the world. Like it does what it's trying to do well. That's what I would say. I think what they're going for, it hits a lot of those marks. But I think that it becomes repetitive, that there's not much to change, especially, hey, you stay in that mine area for far too long.
Oh, like, dude.
And the levels are long, especially if you're not going to the right place right after, you know, like it's if you get lost, you're screwed. Yeah. And I think there's even times where you can accidentally throw a bomb where you shouldn't have, and then you're not going to be able to progress. So you press pause. And when you do, the menu comes up saying, give up. And then you can give up and start it over again. Yeah, that's frustrating.
I think I soft locked myself too.
You can, yeah.
Yeah, like I couldn't progress anymore. And I was like,
that's not okay.
That's not a good mechanic.
Easy fix as well, because you can't lose keys. Or can you kill a guy before he gives you a key? I don't know. Like,
I don't know.
It's problematic.
Aged.
Okay. It does have Blizzard quality.
In what way?
Most areas. So we usually talk about graphics and music, and we're gonna. But just from feeling alone, I was like, all right, like a major studio for sure made this because the animations were really quality. And like we said earlier, the story was well thought out. I mean, it's ridiculous. But most video game stories are ridiculous. Like they spent time trying to build lore and build a world that... their audience would think is really cool. And so like, yeah, that reminds me of Blizzard in a lot of ways.
Does tough BA jeans, combat boots, tank top, does that work for y'all? That genre? Okay, so that's not what I'm asking.
I mean, in 1994, it did.
For you? You're like, yeah.
I'm just saying, like, it was Terminator. Super classic, iconic. Exactly.
Yeah,
that's
like cool guy. Yeah.
But that never worked for me, even back in 1994.
I like it. I mean, to now it's always been cheesy, but now it's just like, okay, like put a shirt on. But I like it. I think it's
he never
so,
took his sunglasses off either, and we never said that. That's very important to this.
Yeah, it's
got to
be so dark down there already. Yeah, no, it kind of appealed to me, especially like Doom. More of the like demonic stuff appealed to me. I wanted to play those games.
Okay, so now we know why you're the way that you are. I would say, though, that that is an aging factor. Kenny, you even said if it appeals to people back in 1994, but not necessarily in 2020, one soon, like then that's something that does age.
Yeah, but I don't feel like
very good.
I don't feel like this game has aged poorly just because the character like lived in mid 90s sort of character stereotype. It's super playable today. It's ambient. It looks good.
Wait a minute.
Like
the
game itself has aged really well. I don't know if the genre has aged well.
Oh, it certainly hasn't. But I also think the game hasn't.
We have played a game fairly recently where Kenny had the exact argument that I have, so the opposite of what he's saying now, where because it was a product of its time, he felt like it wasn't good for today.
Here's the thing about my opinions.
They're trash.
They exist.
Yeah.
Okay, they exist.
And I believe that they're really good.
Well, okay, let's break it down a little bit. So the graphics, I like this look, this pixel look. Trying to think of what it reminds me of. It kind of reminds me of Contra in some ways, just in like the earthiness of that first area in the mine. But like I said earlier, the animations are realistic. I mean, it looks just like Prince of Persia's jumping animation.
It does.
It's
the blocky platform style does have a sort of like PC vibe. It doesn't surprise me that developed for both or a company that developed for both was behind this. Because at a glance, I wouldn't be like, this is for sure Super Nintendo. I might have been like, you know, like freeware back in the day.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of the look it has.
And I'm cool with that. I think it looks really good.
Looks no, that's PC, not a problem.
Looks PC, looks Blizzard, and done really well. In fact, I think like some of the cutscenes for a Super Nintendo cartridge are pretty impressive.
Yep.
Like so much good work done there. And it does, lean more on that Diablo kind of like demonic, dark, gothic side.
Yeah, it's just a darker tone to the world.
They did it the best.
And even though I thought the environments did look good, I just thought because you're in them for so long and there's only four of them, it gets old. I know I'd already mentioned that. Did y'all feel the same way there?
Oh, absolutely.
What, the tone? What gets
old? No, just like spending too long per environment.
Oh,
like
so environments are good, but you're there too long. So then it's like, okay. But, and so I think that's the same way with music. Maybe you like the music. You can talk about that and geek out about it. But there are only seven songs in the entire soundtrack. Only seven.
Wow.
So there's four stages in the game, only one song per stage. And again, you're on that. It's a 6-hour game, I think, if you go straight through. And so you're spending a couple of hours on each stage listening to the same track over and over again. So there's four, a title theme, a cutscene theme, and then your final boss battle. Those are the seven tracks.
They did make these to be repetitious. Like they're ambient kinds of tracks that aren't super like melody driven. And so it at least felt like they were trying to do things that weren't going to be grating when you listen to it for a long time. And I really liked the song on the first level, never really got sick of it. I felt like it set the pace and the tone well. But when you got to the second world, that one was a little heavy handed and I started to notice the repetition and went like, I don't know if this music is going to be as good as I thought it was going to be.
I'll tell you what would have helped is like
if you know how some Metroidvanias have like save rooms and then they have like different music for those save rooms?
Yeah.
Or like secret areas. So there are secret areas in this, in here, like behind waterfalls and stuff. Like you can go in there and save somebody and pick up items and stuff. Like that could have had some really chill and cool music that would break up the monotony. And that's just to have like small tracks here and there, that would have helped, but it's, they just didn't. Seven for the whole game?
Yeah, for the entire game, bro.
It's low. That's low.
Do you know how many songs are on the Super Metroid OST since you just brought that up?
Probably a ton. I don't know.
I don't. I just looked. 34.
Yeah.
So that's a comparison there.
Yeah, both
same console.
Bangers.
But 34 versus 7, dude. 7 is not much.
That's interesting because we talked about music. It's like, yeah, we liked it or we didn't. I think it's so necessary for games, though. It, like,
oh, yeah, sure.
Like, that's a great example. That game, Metroid does atmosphere better than anyone, and they do it with music oftentimes, with other things too. And there was potential here, and I feel like they missed it.
I think one other area that you notice the age is with the saving function and the fact that there is no save function, that you've only got the password system. And yeah, it's a simplistic password system, which is good. So it's not like you're having to do some, we've had some crazy password systems on our podcast so far, but it's only like what, 6 letters that you have to have know the combination, but
it's not bad.
But I think it just sets you at the beginning of that stage, which is not the most frustrating, but some of these stages are long.
For mid-90s, if you're not, like, if you don't have the option to save, like, per where you are, I feel like it's not the worst way to do it. If I was working through this game, at least I wouldn't have to replay the whole thing. You know, you get to a big plot moment. It's short enough that you can literally memorize it and not even have to go scramble for a notebook, which is welcome. And you could just keep playing. Again,
savers.
That doesn't translate super well to 2020, but I don't think it was like poorly done.
Well, and your Super Nintendo, you got the ability to save at
save
this
rooms. Just put them here and there. Yeah.
Wait, honestly, yes. we're Super Nintendo. Why are we doing passwords?
94. It's like it's been out a little.
It's been out. You think it was passwords on DOS as well? Yeah.
Probably.
I'm not going to put in a password on my computer.
It may not have been, but I'd bet it was.
Well, you can get the cartridge, the Super Nintendo cartridge, for $35 for the game alone. That's a little bit up there. We've seen more, or $159, $160, we'll call it, for brand new box, booklet, cartridge. So it's a little bit more pricey, but hey, that's what you get for, it's Blizzard, you know? Oh, but also you can just play, Blackthorn in the Blizzard client.
Yeah, you can. They have like a retro, thing built into the client where like you can play like Diablo 2 through the client, this game. Yeah.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not the game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. It does require 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. I'll begin by simply saying that it's not enough fun to be enjoyable by everybody. And I don't know entirely if it's Blizzard's fault. I think it is the genre. This genre had to evolve, and it did. And there are a lot of people that enjoy this kind of new and improved genre today with Limbo and other games like that. But where it was in the 90s was not yet refined enough to have, in my opinion, a mass appeal, especially for today's audience. There are some things that Blizzard did well here. You might be able to attach it to Blizzard and know it's Blizzard by when you play it, but you might not. And while it is an interesting environment and it's got a cool little story behind it, and nothing that's done is done poorly, it's just not everything that they finalized and gave us isn't fun enough to last for multiple gaming sessions. So I do not give it my vote for New Game Plus status.
Okay, so this one is not a New Game Plus status game for me. it wants to be a good game. It certainly is made with quality and care, and it shows. But I can't tell people today, go out and play it. For this genre, it's not as groundbreaking as Flashback or Prince of Persia, for that matter. It doesn't have the heart and humor of something like an Oddworld. And though because of the quality, I'm not surprised that Blizzard was involved, there's a reason that a bunch of other Blizzard games then went on to become franchises, and this was just a game that happened. Because no one actually wants to play it. the genre is fun for the storytelling, you know, but like, no one's having fun hopping up ledges. No new game plus.
All right. So that's two no's. Nolan, land the Blizzard plane.
I will never give cinematic platformers new game plus.
That's rude.
That's it all I have rude. To say.
That it's is xenophobic, me. Honestly.
At some point, it'll be 15 years from Limbo having existed.
I don't know if I like Limbo. Never played it.
Whoa.
You would like it a lot, honestly.
You would eat your words.
It's probably poo-poo. I'm not playing it.
Don't say that word on my podcast. So that means Dookie. That Blackthorn, the game with Kyle in it, is not New Game Plus certified. But what did you think? We had many of you write in. I'll include a few of those commentaries here right now. Garlisle said, it's heavy metal fantasy Prince of Persia with a dose of guns for good measure. And also, all the people you meet walked off the cover of a romance novel. It's also a more playable experience than I expected. Unlike most of the genre, it rarely wants to instantly kill you. That is true. I'm saying. That is true. Back to Garlisle. It's still tough, though, if not just due to the sheer length of some levels. And I'm not so sure it's really worth it. Maybe I just wasn't that interested in the aesthetic. Maybe the levels just didn't have enough variety. Maybe something else, but I didn't feel much of an urge to finish it.
Has anyone beat this game before?
Of course, Nolan.
Who?
Ever?
A lot of people.
I don't have any names. And you can't give me a name?
All right. Chris. I promise you Chris is beating this.
Who's Chris?
You don't know Chris? I do like what Garlisle pointed out there. That's so true that it is not looking for a way to instant kill you. And that is so welcomed here.
Oh, because sure. you get a little bit of a health bar.
Oh yeah. Right.
Like potions to refill your health.
You get a lot of potions to refill your health from your people, and your health bar expands. I think after you beat the first world, the wizard expands.
Y'all give it new game plus.
And you said there's no evolution in gameplay.
Saint Minister said, what might have some traction as an early Blizzard curiosity is brought to a regrettable halt by its monotonous style of combat. Instead of creatively developing its tactical approach, Blackthorn settles for a repetitious chore of counting shots and popping off. Much like its awkward mashup of fantasy and sci-fi, the game fails to really harmonize this with its otherwise decent problem-solving elements. With the seeds of something unique clearly traceable across its stages, I'd call this one a missed opportunity. No NGP.
Yeah, I think they both hit really good truths about this game. It could have been better. It's a little bit plotty and hard to kind of feel connected to, even though the story's good. And so I get it.
We've really been aligning with our community lately, kind of exactly what we've been saying. They've been saying probably better than us.
Oh, yeah, way better. Kidding me?
George said, a great game for its aesthetic alone. I love the ambient music, the BA protagonist, and brutal villain. Visuals clearly took priority over fluidity of control. Thankfully, the first part of this game seems to take this into account. As it progresses, I found myself getting annoyed and bored with repetitive gameplay and tedious jumps. However, I would give it NGP because it's a very cool game and it's a work of visual art.
No, you wouldn't.
George would. No. He also said, P.S., the name Kyle means the chosen one. But still.
In Greek? What? Look, no, that New Game Plus is invalid because it's one of those votes where it's like you do it because it's like you feel like you have to. Like you have to respect something. Like people do that with movies a lot, and it's just not true.
George, I believe.
Of the jungle.
You're allowed your opinion.
And finally, SNES is Life says, it's great going back to this game as I just discovered it myself a couple years ago. Blizzard made a number of great games for the SNES. Rock and Roll Racing, The Lost Vikings, and this. I was immediately taken in by its excellent animation, dark setting, and solid music, at least for a while. Yeah. Unfortunately, everything gets fairly repetitive quickly. I really enjoyed ducking into the shadows and having the duels with the baddies, seeing who could kill the other first. As far as cinematic platformers go, this one is solid, though the levels are too long and start to drag. I think it's worth playing if this style is your thing. So it is NGP for me, at least.
No, it's not.
In this case, invalidated as well.
In this case, SNES is death.
He put the caveat of if this is your genre, you're going to like this one. And I think that's certainly true. It's a well-made version of this genre. Just the three of us know better than to like this genre.
No, I get it. If this genre is your genre and if this game is a game you like, then you'll probably like this game.
There are
if you
no
like
people.
This game, you're going to like it.
There are, like Nolan. There are. They're telling you right now.
No.
So thank you so much for sending in your thoughts and commentary on the Retro Game of the Week. You can do that each week. Send your thoughts to ngppodcast@gmail.com or drop into our Discord in the commentary channel there. We'd love to include your thoughts next week. But for now, we're going to set aside Blackthorn and we're going to randomly select our next Retro Game of the Week that we'll be playing for the next 7 days from our Retro Master List, user-submitted, user-generated list of games 15 years old or older from any console, any genre, except cinematic, puzzle, simulation platformer. Randomizing now. We're going to be playing an action-adventure game that came out in 1992.
A cinematic action adventure game?
No. This one is exclusive Sega Genesis. How often do we have that?
Not too often.
I get hyped for Sega Genesis, though.
You should, because this was developed by Climax. So, don't want to say anything? And it was published by Sega. It is
Sonic.
A video game and it is called,
wow.
I'll give you the subtitle first.
Yes.
The Treasures of King Knoll, N-O-L-E,
me?
Which is just, yep. I think that is you, buddy.
Oh no.
The game is called Landstalker. Anything?
Nothing. What?
Yeah, nothing.
What?
I got zero on this one.
Yeah, I don't either. And I would know Sega exclusives, I think, or Genesis exclusives. Wow. Who's Climax? What have they done?
I've never heard of Climax
before. I feel like I have. Okay.
Find a copy of Landstalker, The Treasure of King Nolan, and play it along by Climax. Play it along with us this week.
I'm worried about memes in Discord about me being in this game. Speaking of Discord, go to ngppodcast.com and click join us in Discord to take part in our amazing community that helps this podcast thrive just based on people playing games with us and talking about stuff. So see you there.
Speaking of Patreon, join us at patreon.com and be like some of our favorite people, patrons who support this show on an ongoing basis, like our newest producer level supporter, Mr. Lattes. Welcome back.
Welcome.
Our wonderful director level supporter who goes above and beyond in supporting the show in so many different ways, Garlisle, as well as our growing group of producers, Amarlian, Austin, Ben, Brojim, Carrie, David, Dear Baby, Francesca, Corey, Maxima, Shauna, William, and Zion.
Kyle.
You guys are truly, I was going to say one of a kind, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
A dozen or so of a kind.
Yeah. Thanks so much for your support.
You can always follow us on our social media. That's Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. Links are in the show notes. You might even be watching this via video. Again, very clearly, we have a YouTube channel where you can see our video content and see our faces as we do our video episodes as well. You can see and measure Kenny's growing beard length each
and
every week.
It's so big.
COVID has done things to my face.
Oh, no! Listen directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our good friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play Landstalker. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm out.
And this has been New Game Plus. What's your favorite flavored Blizzard Dairy Queen?
Ooh, Reese's.
Probably the same.
You too, same. Though. Yeah,
me too.
It's way better.
It's so good.
Oh, it's so good. But the Snickers one is good. Snickers
yes,
one
yeah,
is good.
Yeah, and like Cookie and like Dough's Oreo. Good. There's a few
Cookie
options.
Cookie Dough's good too, yeah.
But it is. Reese's is where it's at.
Blizzard's been good.
I want to go now.